You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
And I got an email from Dominique and she was like, hey, can you be in New York on Monday? So I took a bus in the middle of the night, got down there. But I honestly didn't know who I was auditioning for or what slot was up. It wasn't until I got the offer that it was for Smokey Robinson.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to Built for the Stage podcast. This is Joe Roscoe, founder of Built for the Stage, Broadway's number one fitness platform. If you want to see what it's like to interact with a coach online, you can go to builtforthestage.com for a free trial, or you can just click the link in the description of this episode. If you like the podcast, please rate, subscribe, and leave a message, swipe up, double tap. Whatever platform you're on, we appreciate it. Thanks again to our producing team, Broadway Podcast Network. You can check them out at bpn.fm. All right, as always, we have an exciting guest for you. Actually, an kind of OG to Built for the Stage. We got to talking way back in, it was July of 2018. Here we are in the mystical land of 2021. And we're excited to bring on Christian Thompson. Christian, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's so great to be here.
My pleasure. Thanks for taking the time. Everyone listening, Christian made his Broadway debut in Ain't Too Proud, and he's currently still with the show playing the role primarily of Smokey Robinson, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Smokey Robinson and Damon Harris in Act Two.
Gotcha. We're going to get into that in just a second. But for those of you that listen a lot to Built for the Stage podcast, you know that we just like to kind of get the backstory on how the actors made their debut and just the journey they took to get there. So, Christian, let's rewind to that. And first, you went to Penn State, right, for your degree in musical theater?
Yeah, I got my BFA in musical theater from Penn State, graduated in 2015.
Okay, very good. All right, so it's 2015. You get out of school and you book Broadway, right? Is that how it happened?
Absolutely not. I've got a couple of friends that, you know, that's kind of how that went, but it was not the case for me. I graduated and actually stuck around State College, which is where Penn State is, for a few months. And it wasn't until probably about, I would say, 3 months after I graduated that I booked a regional production of Dreamgirls. But while I was still in school, I also booked a cruise. So I was waiting for that cruise to start up. And I did After Midnight, which is this massive dance show choreographed by Warren Carlyle on Norwegian Escape. It was a brand new ship, and that was cool. So that's the first thing I did. And I did that for 5.5 months. Until I got injured on that contract. After that, I jumped on the Rent tour and I did that for.
Was the injury major? Did it take a long time to recover? How was that?
It was pretty serious. It was a partial tear in my adductor, in my right adductor. So for a dancer, that's a lot, you know. And I was doing, the role I was doing was Tap Brother 2. So it was based off of the Nicholas Brothers. So, of course, we had a bunch of those jazz splits and like jump 360, like land in a split, come on back up and keep tapping, which was really cool, but real hard on a cruise ship, you know, and you do it. And then sometimes the floor would meet you early or not be there when you thought it would be because the ship's listing. You know, it was fun. It was a good time. But yeah, so it took a while. I'm still dealing with some of the fallout afterwards. If I dance too much in a day, I'll start to feel like just a little fatigue. It gets tired earlier now. So I'm still working on rehabbing it correctly because I didn't get the proper rehab kind of right off the bat in the physical therapy that I probably should have been. But we're working on it now. So, you know, all things pointing up for the future. But it was tricky.
Yeah, how was that? You know, we're all on a break right now, a forced break. But a lot of times, plenty of performers go through injuries and are also put on forced break. How did you learn anything from that experience that you kind of used during the pandemic or vice versa? Tell us a little bit about that and just maybe some inspiration or insight for those listening that might be struggling.
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. I'm going to try to put these thoughts together, say something smart. But yeah, I think the biggest thing for me was learning how to, it's my new favorite word, which is pivot, right? I had to focus on other things, right? I couldn't lean on my dancing. I couldn't just walk into a dance call and know I'd get a call back, which is what I could do. You know, I was like, that's the thing I know I can make happen. Where all of a sudden I had to focus more on my acting and my singing and, you know, at that time, because there were still auditions and stuff to be had. And that's how I booked the Rent tour, you know, where there wasn't too much dancing, I thought. And then I booked Benny and realized that he has a major dance number in Contact. But other than that, it was definitely something where I had to relook at who I was and what I was as an artist, right? And what defined me. So I think it's always a good idea to reevaluate, to take some time and reevaluate and, you know, maybe try something different. You know, if you know, you think of yourself as that dancer, maybe it's time to, you know, make sure you're in those singing lessons. Because sometimes we can feel so good about training the thing we're good at that we forget to train the other things, especially in musical theater. You know, we've got to be triple, quadruple threats. You know, we're out here singing, dancing, acting, and like yourself, personal training, you know, so we're trying to do it all. And it's important to, you know, to make sure that you're working out both the strengths and the weaknesses.
Love that. It was a great response. No pressure there.
Nailed it.
Well done, but no pressure in the future of this conversation. All right, let's go. You talked about a little bit being a road warrior in Rent on tour. So you did cruise ship, you did the tour life. What brought you to the Ain't Too Proud audition? Tell us about just that pursuit of booking Broadway.
Yeah. So we actually have to rewind even further to really get this full story. So while I was at Penn State, I met Dominique Mariso because she came in. She was commissioned to do a piece for Penn State. And through happenstance in certain situations, I became the only undergraduate student in this graduate performance show called Blood at the Root. So it was myself, five graduate actors, and Dominique and Steve H. Broadnax III, who has his first Broadway show coming whenever we open again in Thoughts for a Colored Man, of a Colored Man. And so we created this show together called Blood at the Root, and we got to see the world with it. We went to Edinburgh and South Africa and Australia, and we got to do a lot of cool things with that. But so I made a personal connection to Dominique. She became like a mentor to me. So when I was on the road, I had reached out to her about doing Pipeline, because that was going to the Lincoln Center, and that didn't work out. And then we were in Buffalo, I think it was, with Rent, and I got an email from Dominique, and she was like, hey, can you be in New York on Monday? So I took a bus in the middle of the night, got down there, auditioned for, I don't even know if they were using Ain't Too Proud as the name at the time. I think it was still the Motown Project or something like that, or the Detroit Project. But I knew it was a bunch of Motown songs, you know, they had all that. But I honestly didn't know who I was auditioning for or what slot was up. It wasn't until I got the offer that it was for Smokey Robinson, and it wasn't until the second read through that I knew that I was playing Damon Harris, which was a big shock for me. We went through the first read through and nobody read for Damon, and so I like went to stage management. I was like, I'm sorry, but are we like missing somebody? What's happening here? And they were like, oh no, that's you. I'm like, oh great, oh fantastic. So yeah, it really was just a happy blessing of, you know, having met someone so influential that and made a real connection with. And got an email, got a bus, and, you know, wound up, you know, what was it, 2 years after we started on Broadway.
Wow. Did you have a good feeling from the start, or when you first got there, did you think it was just going to be, you know, any other shot in the dark of like, I'll put my name out there, but, you know, I don't know if it'll actually happen.
Well, it was so interesting because there seemed to be a buzz around the show from the get-go. So before I had joined, they had done a workshop in New York, and that had gone off really well. But I mean, it was you know, Dez and Sergio and Dominique and Robert Brill was doing the set design, and it was Paul Tazwell costumes. And so it was just this like powerhouse of a creative team where I was like, wait a minute. You know, we had Hal Blinkley, rest in peace, doing lighting. You know what I mean? It was just one of those things where there was just too much energy behind it. So from early on, we knew that that was the goal, that this was not a show that was just being created to be created. There was a focused goal to make it to Broadway, which was really exciting. It was the first time I had ever been a part of something like that. It was tough, though, because we got so close. We got, you know, we were in Berkeley. We were breaking their box office records at the time. And so we were like, oh, this is for sure. Like, we got a little cocky about it. We were like, oh, yeah, we're going to go in like 3 months. We're going to be there. And we ended the run after, I think it was 3 extensions, with no Broadway house. And the kick in the face that was, you know, just getting so close and then having that door kind of slammed on you. And the only thing they said was, we're trying to work something out for May-ish. It wouldn't be Broadway, but they're working on something. I was like, great. In my head, I was like, all right, we're going to tour and they're going to make this the first national tour. And then once the tour does well, we'll go to Broadway. And then they announced the pre-Broadway tour. And I was like, see this. I knew it. But it only had 3 cities on it. It had DC, LA, and Toronto. And LA is actually where I did my first little stint with Built for the Stage. So that was, it helped me get ready for the show. Really, truly. But yeah, it was tough because we were on the road and there was still this thing of like, are we gonna get there? Or are they just gonna keep tacking on cities, you know? And then it was just before we opened in LA that they gathered us all on the stage and announced that we'd be going in the spring, well, early spring. And I mean, it was a very surreal moment, because then we had to turn around and do the show, right? We couldn't really sit in it. It wasn't one of those things where like Broadway didn't call, right? Like they got us together and it was like, oh my God. And I was sobbing because that's all I know how to do. If anyone who knows me knows that I'm just a crybaby. It's in my genes, and that's okay. You know what? Listen, I'm going to own it. So we, you know, did that, and then we dried our tears, and then we were in, you know, previews, and, you know, we had a show to do that night. So it was really no rest for the wicked in that situation. But it was great because then we got to do like a victory lap, right? We had LA and Toronto to be like, this is the show that's going to Broadway. And that was a lot of fun. So, and then it was, we stopped that in November and then we opened in March. So we had a little bit of a break in between. I sold some merch for some shows in between to make some money. Cause you know, you can't stop, right? The hustle doesn't stop. And I think that was really interesting because I was working at the Hamilton store, which is right across the street from our theater. So I watched mm-hmm. them put up the marquee while I was working at the Hamilton store, which was also very surreal. But that, I mean, that's pretty much it. That was the journey.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUPS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. Suf's The Original New Musical from Shana Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Tell us about that, like how that was, that in between. I love stuff like that. I find that I get riled up. I get inspired when I hear just like the hustle doesn't stop, you know? What was that like? You got done with the mini tour. You're waiting on Broadway and you're selling merchandise at the Hamilton store. Are you grateful knowing your time's coming, or like, how was it?
You know, I'm going to be honest, because it's you and Built for the Stage, you know, and so I'm always trying to give y'all the real. It was tough. It was really frustrating, because love to Jeremy Pope, but Jeremy Pope was already doing another show, right? And it was one of the reasons we had to wait. We had to let Choir Boy get into their run before we could start taking him away for rehearsals and for tech and then to do shows. So it's one of those things where I was a little frustrated, because it took me a while to kind of get in this mindset of like, it's coming and I just have to wait for it, right? Because I had already waited a year and a half or so, right? So it was a little tough, where I was like, all right, well, now it's here, but I can't have it yet. And that was hard, because then I also would be, you know, selling merch for a show like Hamilton, which is one of my dream shows. So I'd be sitting there listening to the music and I'm like, I just want to be on stage, you know. But I also knew that like I couldn't be financially irresponsible and like go in the red waiting for Broadway to come. Like, Broadway is not going to fix all of my, you know, my problems. It's not going to change, you know, everything if I go there broke, you know? So I was like, all right, I've got to do something. You know, and there were moments where people would give me lip as I was staring at my theater, you know? I was just like, if you knew. But that was the cool thing, right? That was the thing for me, is that it then reminded me, that's right, like, you have to treat everyone with the same respect you would, you know, the people you look up to, because you never know who's who. Especially in our industry, you never know which waiter is writing that musical that's about to win the Tony next year. Like, you never know. And we hear stories about it all the time, but it was so true. I mean, I will never forget, you know, some lady yelling at me because, you know, I wasn't ringing her up fast enough and she thought she was going to miss the show, even though it was 2 hours later. What, I don't know, whatever it was, where I was just like, lady, if you knew, that like literally you're gonna be paying $200 and some odd to see me on stage soon. Like, that's what's mm-hmm. Because she even talked about it. She was like, oh, I'm so excited for Ain't Too Proud. It's gonna be great. I'm so, and I was like, if you just go across, like, my face is on that door. Like, you know? So it was just, it was very surreal, but it also was super humbling, right? So it was a mixture of a very positive, like, self-reinforcement. And also the humbling experience of like, yeah, but at any time you could be selling some t-shirts and that's okay.
And that's okay. 100%. I love that story in the theater world. I love it in the fitness space, where you might be on top of your game one day and then you either have a setback, an injury, maybe you go through a little bit of a mental struggle and that brings your fitness down as well. But hey, this is I like to call it a highway with no exits. Yeah. You know, we're on this thing for the long haul, and you just got to keep moving forward, no matter what peak or valley you're in at the moment.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I hope that everyone listening gets a lot out of that, especially in these times. I'm taking a lot for sure. So thanks for being transparent there. You mentioned Dominique and that relationship or connection that like meant a lot to you starting out. Do you have any other influential people that really just set you on a path that you could look back and be grateful for?
I've got so many. To be completely honest, I was thinking about this the other day. No, this is a no judgment zone. But I was doing one of those random acceptance speeches that you do in the shower, you know, every once in a while where you're like, oh, well, if I got this award, what would this sound like? But it got me thinking to like, who got me here, right? How did I get to this spot? And it's such a like built by a village situation, right? In a way that I didn't realize until I got older, until I could like sit back and really think on it. But I had mentors from when I was younger, people like, and these people are just community people that no one would know, you know what I mean? But there were people in my life like Woody Cadet, Willie Butts down in Florida, like Pablo Malco, also down in Florida, like all of them are down in Florida, but
these are theater artists?
No, so that's the crazy thing. So two of them are dancers and one of them was just a community leader, right? But there was this situation where they would just always take care of me in a way that was like, that was just so comforting and nurturing. And it was a situation of like, we know you're special. Right. We know you've got something. So they kept me out of trouble. Right. They got me to dance, you know, practice or whatever it was that I needed to be at. So that was the first thing. And like Woody would come to my shows, like he didn't miss a show. Leslie Shell's another one. And then Steve, Steve H. Broadnax III, who is a director. He's the head of the MFA program at Penn State. He's director, writer, I mean, does it all. But he took me under his wing in college. And that was life-changing. Because he was the first person that let me express myself as a Black artist as well. And to be proud of that fact and not try to fit some kind of mold or anything like that. So that was absolutely life-changing.
Can you go into that a little bit more? How was that? What did that transition entail? Like, specifically, where that just freed you up to be who you were?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a fascinating transition, right? Because specifically in musical theater, right, there's so often a kind of a crutch of fitting molds, right? You've got to fit into this mold, like be this, or you know, uniqueness isn't really allowed unless you're on the front of it, right? So like with Ain't Too Proud, I got to create my character, right? So I could be my unique self in that role. But usually you're fitting roles that are already done by somebody else. And, you know, so there's cookie cutter things that need to exist. And then on top of that, most of the roles that I was trying to fit in weren't created for me to begin with, right? They weren't created for my body or for my experience to begin with. So there was this sense of always having to be a chameleon or always having to, you know, squish myself into a space that felt acceptable or, you know, easy to understand or easy to, you know what I mean? But Steve opened my eyes to a lot of the Black theater repertoire. He introduced me to Dominique's work, to August Wilson's work, you know, and things like that. Introduced me to the foundations of hip hop theater and that it already existed, right? That was one thing that I was always super passionate about, but didn't really know that it was around. But hip hop theater has been around. Like, I mean, we talk about Hamilton and In the Heights. Those were commercial successes in musical theater, but people have been writing hip hop musicals long before them. And I feel like that was a massive thing for me. And I hope for, you know, people listening to realize that people have been doing the work for a long time. And the, you know, the theater of the oppressed and things like that. And then we did shows that had hip hop in it. And he let me help choreograph Blood at the Root. So I got to do, you know, I got to be entrenched in who I was as a human being. I got to put my experiences and cultures and specific talents to use, where usually I was shutting all of those away to try to be what I, you know, what people wanted me to be or what I needed to be. So opening that up just transformed me, really, because then I could take me, and instead of trying to fit a form, I was like, this is what it looks like on me. It became a coat, right? It became a way of like, yeah, I'm gonna do this role, but I'm gonna do it like me. And that's 100 times better. And it's 100 times more authentic and is going to feed my soul 100 times more than trying to, you know, break my body down into a way that, you know, you think you want to see.
Yeah. Thank you. That must have just been, I don't know, like a gust of wind behind you, just like surging you forward out of, you know, maybe an idle place where you felt stuck.
For sure. I mean, it also was one of those things, though, where like when I was in it, I didn't realize how massive it was, right? Like when I was a part of it, it was just like, oh, I'm doing stuff, right? I'm doing, oh, you need me to do this? I got you. And you need me to do this? I got you, right? Oh, I'll read that. Cool. We can talk about it, right? And it just felt very natural. And it was just one of those things where it was like, okay, cool. I'm just in it. But it wasn't until I took a step back and realized how much I had grown as an artist, right? I also, shout out Kikora Franklin, who's a professor at Penn State, the dance professor, who pushed me to my limits, right? But it was one of those things where I was like, this is training, right? This is just training. What I didn't realize is they were training me mentally. You know, they were training my soul to be a part of the art, right? They were helping me carve out the artist that I could be. But that you can't see that while you're carving, right? When a sculptor's sculpting, you're not going to be able to see what the form is until they step away. And so it really wasn't until I took a step back and realized, oh, right, that's where I get, you know, I've been writing a lot more in the COVID times. And I look at my writing and I go, oh, that would have never happened if I didn't have the experience that I had with Kikora and Steve.
Wow, cool. Awesome testament to them.
Yeah.
Last question as we wrap up the episode here. I like to ask this one a lot during the pandemic times, like you said. Fast forward, you get to go back to Ain't Too Proud. You get to step on the stage. What will you take with you from the pandemic that you might have learned or acquired? And what will you leave behind? I know the pandemic for me, just to give like an example, is that since the world stopped, quote unquote, in a way, it let you look back and realize that there might have been some things in life that just happened organically because of the speed of our day to day, especially in New York.
Right.
And once I slowed down, I realized like, oh, when we get back to the everyday, I need to remember like, I don't need that. So, when you get back on the stage, what's one thing you're going to take with you and what's one thing you'll make sure you leave behind?
Definitely. I love this. This is great. I think the one thing I would, I'm definitely going to take with me is the thing, and it's kind of also the thing I'm leaving behind. The thing I'm taking with me is an energy and an acceptance that my ideas are worthy of exploration, right? Because what I'm leaving behind is the crippling self-doubt, right? So not just self-doubt, because we're always going to have that little voice in our head that's telling us, but the crippling self-doubt that stopped me from writing for over 10 years, right? I wanted to write back when I was in high school, but I always thought that maybe I just wasn't good enough. Maybe that wasn't my thing. So I made excuses. I don't have the time, right? Like you were talking about, oh, we're in the hustle and flow of things. Like I don't have time to sit down and write. I don't have, you know. And so when COVID hit, I had the time. So it was one of those things where I had to then put, you know, pen to paper, AKA, you know, fingers to keyboard. But it hasn't gone poorly, right? It's people have reacted positively to what I'm writing. And I was like, oh, well, crap. If I had started this earlier, you know, who knows what could be happening now. But that, and then the other thing, and this is a funny anecdote. We went to Japan with Rent. And when we went to Japan, of course, everyone was wearing face masks on like public transit and things like that. I got back to the States and I was like, you know what I want to do? I'm going to make a designer mask company, right? And then I'm going to go to Japan. I'm going to get the cool kids over there wearing it and it'll go viral. And so then the kids in America start wearing them, you know, it'll just be a fashion thing. Like, you know, we get Gucci over, you know, over the mouth and it'll be, you know, it'd be all Gucci. So that was my idea. And I was like, nah, never mind. I'm not going to do it. If I had known that a global pandemic was going to hit, you know, me and Jeff Bezos would be sipping on some Mai Tais. So, you know what I mean? It's just one of those things where, and who knows? Like, really, I probably wouldn't have been able to get off the ground anyway. But it was that thing,
hey,
of like,
you know, don't
you
do
never
that.
Know.
Come back.
You're right. We cut that out. Take that part out. No, you're absolutely right. Who knows? You know what I mean? But it's that self-crippling doubt of just stopping yourself and not finding out the what if, right? And let other people try to stop your what if. Like, don't you stop your what if. There's enough obstacles out there in life. You know, there's enough naysayers. Like, haters got their job to do. Let them do that, right? Don't do it to yourself, right? If you're not rooting on your team, you know, that's self-sabotage, you know? Sabotage is sabotage. So I'm sick of sabotaging myself. So that's what I'm not going to do. And I'm going to keep letting my ideas, you know, grow and see what happens with them.
I love that. I say that all the time to clients. Allow yourself to succeed. Yes. Allow yourself. Just let yourself succeed. Because a lot of the times it's just you holding yourself back. So amazing. Sure. Thank you so much, Christian, for taking this time to join us on Built for the Stage podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. This was so much fun.
Our pleasure. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening to Built for the Stage podcast. Once again, if you want to try that free trial, go to the website builtforthestage.com or click the link in the description of this episode. You can work with a coach, you can get fitness training, nutrition guidance, and how you can marry those things together with your life in theater. All right, until next time, Joe Roscoe signing off. Later.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.